click on the record button, okay? Maybe a show of hands for people who have used an iPod before. Okay, quite a few of you. Excellent. And have you used iTalks before, the voice recorder? Okay, so I'll talk a little bit about how iTalks can be used in education and in second language acquisition in particular. And when I'm done this presentation, I will put the audio file on the website. And in fact, the website already has audio from a couple of other presentations I gave on the same topic, beginning at a NERCOM special interest group presentation, in October, November. And then again at the Middlebury Center for Educational Technology, I talked a bit about iPods. And I also gave a presentation to the language school directors, Middlebury College language school directors, last spring, talking about how iPods could be used for language schools. And based on the feedback from that, Middlebury College decided to buy 100 iPods for use in language schools in a language school pilot project involving the Russian school, first and second year students in the Russian school, and also the Chinese school, first year students in the Chinese school. So we bought 100 iPods, and we preloaded these iPods with material that they needed to study. So I'll go through that. Let me talk a little bit about then the capture process. And I really want to think about, try to convey what is unique about iPods, what makes iPods in particular, and I think other MP3 players in general, far superior for listening to audio. One of the features of digital audio media players is the ability to capture. Many of them now come with recording devices. And this is far superior than any kind of analog recording we've done in the past, right? Because you can record it and immediately make it available, put it on a website and immediately have it available and reproduce it as many times as you want. Versus prior to digital recording, you had to record in an analog way. And when you record in an analog way, you then had to capture that and convert it into digital. And that took place in real time, and nobody had time to do that, right? So with digital recording, you can record it. So it now becomes possible, whether you want to or not, it becomes possible to record your class session and make that available on the web immediately afterwards. That's one simple usage of what you could do with iPods. But with a little bit more work, you can take those raw files and you can edit them in various ways and begin to extract out important stuff that might be more useful to students that come from a class session or any other place, lectures for instance. So the iPod that we gave to language school students included the iTalk voice recorder, and we had hoped that they would use that recorder for recording all sorts of things on campus, and I'll talk a little bit about how they use that. So I think capture is one unique innovation that comes with digital media devices. The other is the ability to really collect in a systematic way audio files. Before digital audio, you had audio CDs, and you could put stuff in audio CDs, you could buy audio CDs. But you had very limited ways of accessing and organizing that material. An audio CD basically has a number of tracks, and those tracks might have names, and you can jump from one track to another, but that's about it. Whereas when you get into digital audio, digital media devices, you have a lot of metadata that goes with that. I'm not sure if you know how the metadata works with MP3 files, but essentially it is embedded in the audio file, so that when you put the audio file on your MP3 player, your MP3 player reads the embedded metadata and then uses that for navigation. And the iPod has a very well-designed navigation system, but it's only as good as the metadata. And the metadata that's used on iPods is really designed for music. It's a metadata standard called ID3, really stands for ID and MP3 files. This is intended for music. It has fields for artist, album, and genre, which are fine for music, but don't translate very well for other kinds of things. And we see this happening now with the ID3 standard. It's beginning to evolve to encompass lots of other usages not in the original plan for ID3. So we took our existing material for the Russian school and the Chinese school. We had already developed for those schools, as well as the Japanese and the Arabic schools, lexical databases of all their core vocabularies and dialogues. And we had already developed these. We've had them available for a number of years now. And we deliver these to students through interface we called StudyDB, which enabled students to find, search through thousands of vocabulary items that were organized by lesson, and allowed them to get to those audio files and play them through our database. And it was a fairly sophisticated database interface. I actually wrote an article about it in the ADFL Bulletin 2003 called New Tools for Second Language Acquisition, Memory in the Information Age, or something like that. So we have thousands of files for Russian and Chinese, which we took. We wrote a little program, basically, which extracted the metadata from the database and embedded it into the audio files. And we thought closely about how best to use the ID3 metadata standard to organize the material. So we took the artist field, and we used that to put information about the textbook which the audio files came from. Golasa for Russian and Beginning Mandarin Chinese were the textbooks that we used. So all the audio files had in the artist field those textbook titles. But you can also repurpose that for other things. If you were recording a lecture, for instance, the artist would probably become the speaker. If you had a set of vocabulary items arranged by rubric, no, that doesn't work. I'm sorry. The other field we have is album, and we use the album field to record information about the lesson or the unit that the students were studying, so that if you wanted to study lesson one, you would go navigate on your iPod to the genre, to the artist, Beginning Mandarin Chinese, or the artist Golasa. From there you see all the albums, which were all the lessons. Maybe this is trivial, I don't know if people know about this already, but that was the way we organized it. And from the lesson, then you go in and you can see all the vocabulary, all the dialogues if they were available for that lesson. Question, yeah. Yep. Through iTunes, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, you can, that's right, you add the metadata through iTunes. So you, well, we did it programmatically because we had a database of thousands of audio files. So we added the metadata programmatically, but you can add metadata yourself through iTunes. It has a fairly well-developed interface for adding metadata, and I might be able to show that. Genre is another field. Genre in context of music is where you put, you know, this is genre rock, this is genre jazz. In the context of language learning, we simply had the genre be the language dash in the whatever language that was. So the genre field was language dash Russian, language dash Golasa, language dash Chinese. That allowed you to very quickly, students to get very quickly to the audio files that they needed to listen to, because that's what you want your students to be able to do, is efficiently get to what they need to listen to. So by using the metadata tags, and I guess I can actually show that here. Let's see. No, you probably won't be able to see that in the back of the room. Yeah. Oh, actually, maybe. Can you see that at all? Let me pop up iTunes itself. Yeah. This is not, that's a screen image. You mean which?
You can't go up to view and then
Yeah, it is already. I'm not going to expand this because that's an image.
Okay.
Right. But maybe I can show you iTunes itself. You can't see that probably. Here are all the genres. iTunes is an excellent tool for browsing and finding files. You know, one of the problems with audio is that you can't search the audio itself. So I think the prevalence of audio files have really caused software developers to really improve searching interfaces. And this is, iTunes is really what's called a faceted search and browse system. You can search for a particular item by going in here and find everything that has Gola Sa in the artist field. But to give you a better example, if I search for John here, I can find all the music that has John in the artist. Or I can find all the audiobooks that have John in the author field, or John in the title field, or John anywhere in any of their fields. This may not seem very important now, but as you begin to get into thousands of audio files, and really, the more audio files you have, you need to be able to find them, and you need to be able to have a tool that will let you find exactly the audio that you want, using a combination of browsing facets or attributes such as genre, artist, and album, or browsing across all of those to get to exactly what you'd like to see. So let me show you the Russian and Chinese material if you can see it. I'm scrolling down my genre field here, and I have language Chinese I've got selected here. And I have beginning Mandarin Chinese in the artist field there. And then in the album over there on the right is all the lessons. One of the problems with iPods is when you're listening to iPod, it does display the song title, the artist, and the album. And that's it at this point. The new iPods display more, but let me talk about that first. So if you're studying Chinese, you need to learn how to read the Chinese characters, but you also want to see what that word means. So we had to actually create four different versions of the audio files. One version of the audio files which had English, and I don't actually have it here, that had English in the song name. So as you're listening to your iPod, you can see the English translation of that word, and you can hear the Chinese, right? And then when you've mastered that, you could go on and display the pinyin, so you can see the pinyin on the iPod and hear the Chinese rendition of that. And from there, you can move to traditional and simplified characters. Unfortunately, a big limitation of the iPod that we used this summer was that you couldn't see the Chinese, and then if you wanted to see the translation of that term, there was no way of displaying that. We stored all the translation information in the comments field, the ID3 comments field, had all the information about the translation. So if you're watching in iTunes, you can see the Chinese characters, and you can see how they translated into English. You probably can't see back here, but the Chinese characters are here, and the translation is here in the comments field. But that comments field does not get displayed on iPods until the latest iPod. The latest iPod, the video iPod, does allow you to display lyrics, and this is really exciting. So you can now have a Chinese a audio file that has a Chinese dialogue in it, and you can also see the characters by clicking over. You can see you put the Chinese translation in the lyrics field of the iPod, and then you can see the Chinese characters as you're listening on the iPod. I think that's a tremendously helpful innovation with the latest iPods. But that was not something we could do this summer, so we had four different versions of each audio file. Yeah?
You know, a student in the Chinese class, did you post all of these lessons to the website and just have them download it?
Good question. We preloaded all the iPods before the summer started. We preloaded them with all the material, and then when the students arrived, We handed out the iPods. We did that through the library circulation desk. Students had to come in. They had to bring their ID. They checked out the iPod. They checked it out for the summer. They signed a release form that said that, you know, if the iPod was lost, they would pay for the replacement. They also signed out a metadata release form. And this is really interesting. We asked permission to use the metadata from the iPods. Another tremendous innovation about iPods is that they track what you do with them. They track every time you listen to an audio file, the last time you listen to an audio file, how many times you listen to an audio file. They track all that information. So what we did at the end of the summer, took back all the iPods, we aggregated all that. And I'm going to be talking a little bit about those results, and that'll get into how successful all of this was, which you're probably interested to know. So here's the Chinese material. Let me show you the Russian material, very similar. We had two versions of the audio files. I'm sorry, I can't hear. Yep. If you don't want them to see it, don't include the translation in the audio file. Just show them the audio file without the translation. Show them the audio file with just the rendition in the language that they're studying, and then you could have a translation exercise that required that. There is no way to hide it automatically. You would have to give them an audio file that had no translation. Yep. Yep. Any other questions?
Only in that new video one.
But now in the new video one, yeah. And the old iPod, you couldn't actually even see the translation. But now with the new iPod, you can see the translation if you choose to put that in. And that's up to you pedagogically, what you want to do with that. Yeah, so again, with the current, last summer, we had to use different versions. We had a version, you can't see it probably, with Cyrillic characters in the song name, and another version with English characters in the song name. Okay, I thought maybe I can turn it over to Karen, who can talk a little bit about how this worked out in the Russian school, some of the challenges we had. So let me just reiterate, the Chinese school, we had vocabulary and dialogues. The Russian school, we only had vocabulary. So, and this, I think, was one of the problems. We didn't have everything that the Russian school had, the Russian school students were required to study. So, yeah.
First of all, let me ask in the room, how many of you are Russian teachers? Okay, good. All right. And there are a few. I wanted to make sure not to bore you with details about the Russian textbook if it applies to no one in the room. So I will keep that brief and try to speak generally about what I see from the point of view of the Russian school as the pluses and the limitations of using iPods this last summer. First of all, good morning. Доброе утро. Доброе утро. We used the textbook Galusta, of which I am second author, the first author, Rich Robin, developed all of the audio materials and the video materials. What the first thing that we began using for the iPod this last summer, as Alex mentioned, was basically an audio series of flashcards. And this has pedagogical pluses and minuses, and we can talk about that. There are various pedagogical issues involved in what kinds of things to choose to put on the iPod. But what we were first doing was responding to a student request that came up in the Russian school 3 years ago from students who wanted to have audio versions of all the vocabulary items. So in 2002, we took the last both volumes and had people record the entire vocabulary list for both volumes, 20 lessons. So that's been on Alex's Study DB program now for 3 years. Students were able to access this on a closed site at Middlebury on the web. Well, I should add that all of Galassa's materials, the audio and video materials, are open access, non-password. Any of you can look at it at any time, and I can give you the URL when I take questions. But so what happened this summer was that the audio material for the vocabulary items was loaded up onto these iPods. The iPods were given to students in those levels that were using Galassa because SETI-DB was already prepared for students at those levels. What we found was that the strongest and the weakest students in these groups were the ones using these vocabulary items, which would probably be not much of a surprise to any of you as teachers. That is, those students who really were learning well and wanted to learn more, to have all these vocabulary items isolated as audio items that they could then sort the way anyone could sort flashcards, and those students who really needed help and wanted to hear these words more and more. So those two groups of students found this the most useful. The students in the middle expressed a desire, as did the faculty in levels 1 and 2 of the Russian school, to have all of the audio material from Galassa placed onto the iPod. So that's the plan for the future. The other items from the Galassa audio files that you can see on the web are dialogues that are slow tempo and so we can see the piece of text in the textbook. Conversations which are not, for which students do not see the text and they are spoken at a normal tempo. Also larger listening exercises which are semi-authentic materials, for example, airport announcements, advertisements, the kind of things that are larger conversations that give more oral input for students to work with, and students find these the most difficult exercises. Also, there are oral drills that are fairly standard from some pedagogical point of view, old-fashioned substitution drills. And that is about it. There are a few other things, but most of the other things would not necessarily be practical to put on an iPod, such as the video materials at this point. That would be possible perhaps at a later date. But the students expressed the desire to have all of this material with them on the iPod, to basically be using the iPod as a combination of a website and a tape recorder all at the same time. So they're carrying around a CD version, in essence, on the iPod of all these materials. That's what they'd like to see. Now, what I would like to see is, in the future, would be a combination of old and new pedagogy. So I would like to be able to have students work with the vocabulary items, if they wish, the way they would work with flashcards. I would also eventually like to see podcasts, small news broadcasts that are authentic, other items that give larger amounts of input for students to listen to larger amounts of text that they could carry around like songs. There are, of course, copyright difficulties with this last suggestion, but if in my heart of hearts, if this were possible from the copyright point of view, I would like to have students listen to songs. That we were finding, looking at the iPod, that there were some unfamiliar song titles there, so we're suspecting that students were downloading songs anyway. And they had some of the highest listening rates of any items on the iPod. And I think theoretically those could make for outstanding exercises if the copyright were to allow. In other words, the teacher could assign a song in the way you're all familiar with. After your questions have pre-listening and post-listening activities, this would be larger chunks of text that I think would make a much more intelligent use of the iPod and use the students to be familiar with since they're using it to listen to songs to anyway. So I think it had limited success this last summer. I think it could have greater success if larger chunks of text were put on the iPod. For us, from the point of view of, particularly I should say for Alex, from the point of view of studying how the students are using these, it's an extremely interesting tool to see exactly how students are studying. That there are certain words that students chose, certainly predictably these are words that tended to be the most difficult to pronounce, or some words that had grammatical difficulties. For example, the expression for to like, which has equivalence to all other Western languages involving a native speaking Russian or indirect object pronoun in other languages. And very tricky items like that were the ones most listened to, that is after the download of 15 other songs that they listened to. That's about all I have to say about the Russian material. Questions? Yes. Right. Because this could give them the possibility of listening somewhere outside of the computer. In other words, in the environment of Middlebury, if they are running with a computer, either they are fortunate enough to have their own computer in their own room, or they're in front of a computer screen where there are other people around. And so if there's a question of them wanting to repeat something, wanting to answer something, wanting to say something to themselves, wanting to sing along with the song, it would be nice to give them the opportunity for mobility. So this would simply allow them to, with pencil and paper in hand, to do those same exercises outside the computer lab. So they could do the same thing sitting on the grass, which is a lovely part of the Newberry experience as well, or while they're walking, and they could sit down and know things as they wish. So basically, transport their mobility.
Could charged with capturing and recording any of their dialogue or their own spoken voice in the vocabulary? Or
they were not charged with that. That's certainly a potentially good use of the iPod, and that is a use of the iPod that's being encouraged at my academic year home institution, Ohio University, where the iPods are also being introduced for use. Our feeling at Middlebury was that the teachers and students are in such close contact, there wasn't really any need to assign students recorded items that the faculty would then be listening to outside the classroom, because it was so, we saw each other formally 4 hours a day, and it was very easy to be testing students in a live situation. In a situation where there's not so much faculty-student contact, I think, which, for example, my home institution would serve as a good example, that, I think, would be a potentially very good use. Having students record something, email it to the faculty member has all these things to listen to, and then can grade essentially something like oral quizzes as take-home tests, and I think that's...
And this was actually done in the Spanish school, and I can talk a little bit about that later on. The Spanish school had some exercises that required students to go out in the field with their iPods and do short recordings, and it was very interesting setup. She required students to do two-minute recordings. They couldn't write anything down. They had to go to some place, and the exercises involved beginning with very concrete descriptions of things. And as the semester progressed, it went from concrete to abstract. But there continued to be a two-minute limit, and I can just show you quickly. You may not be able to see, but let's see. Spanish. Yeah, here we go. Interesting comment on metadata. All the artists then shown there are students in the class. So students did the recording assignment, which required that they describe their room, describe a painting in the museum, describe the Middlebury College dining hall. And they had to take their iPod. They did it on location. They recorded, and when they were done, they handed those in to, I think they actually brought the iPod to the instructor. They could have, it can be done, that they could simply email or upload it to a website. That was all aggregated, and then the instructor went in and added the metadata, and she actually used various fields. I think she even included the rating field. She put comments in the comments field of some of these that the students could then see. 21 annos, I don't know what that is. But here, there's instructions on, is anyone here speak Chinese? A presentation of Rebecca, a visit to the church. And the more involved ones were a hypothesis or a description of a country. So they started off again with a concrete exercise and going on to more abstract. So that was one interesting. But nobody else in the Chinese or the Russian school used the recording very much, and we were surprised. I think, as Karen said, Middlebury is quite rich and immersive already, that they had so much material and so much contact that may be why they didn't use the voice recorders. With the iTalk comes with, when you plug an iTalk in, you automatically get a recording interface, which you can then stop and save. And then when you plug it into the iPod, it automatically downloads that recording from the iPod into iTunes. And then in iTunes, you can add the metadata, such as your name as the artist, description of what the file is, and, you know, categorize in some way. And then students could have emailed it, uploaded it to a website. As it turned out, they just handed in the iPods and the instructor did that. But that's an interesting usage of iPods. Yeah.
I do it with my 7th graders. I send audio files to a teacher school in France.
Yep.
And it's really opened up a whole new way for the kids to feel get to know one another. But this is so much easier.
So much easier.
And I don't have to monitor the audio files.
Yeah. I think interviews are common. Lots of students will be required to do an interview with somebody.
I'm interested in actually how thin the audio files are. We're currently using a very cheap, I think it's Audacity, which has a metadata interface.
Yep.
But, we do a lot of emailing and Dropbox things for Blackboard. Is it thin enough to really handle
it? It captures uncompressed. On the iPod, so when you download it, you're going to have to compress it, and if you want to preserve the quality, you can get away with 96 kilobits per second mono, and if you do that, that's anything below that is going to reduce the audio quality, but 96 seems to be a sufficient number. But yeah, those audio files will get big. The latest iPods, by the way, these iPods did not record very well. The quality was not CD quality. The newest iPods now are CD quality. Yeah, they don't have any microphones for them yet, but they will soon. Yeah. Yes?
I have a question about the last song. The procedure, the use of the iPod is obviously for the learning process. Now, in the assessment or testing, what do you do for testing? Or at the end of the semester, let's say, before you give the student a grade, you evaluate. What do you evaluate?
We haven't been using the iPod at all for any kind of testing, although that is a potential use, certainly. There certainly would be possible to have some kind of oral assignment prepared and have it turned in, have something emailed to the faculty member. I think that would be an excellent use. I also really like the idea of interviews around campus, which is something we've had students do with writing but not orally, so that's something I think we could very gladly integrate. As for the testing, I have to say that the iPod technology has not changed the modes in which we are testing our students' oral ability. And that's something we could think about for the future. But in essence, at levels 1 and 2 at Middlebury, the students have weekly oral quizzes at which they present dialogue, they play out some kind of a not predicted role play, and they're asked several questions. So they're tested on their ability to produce a memorized dialogue. Sometimes they produce some kind of a memorized poem in very much the Russian tradition. Sometimes they are given a situation that they are required to play out, and sometimes they are asked questions, so they're having a face-to-face conversation with the teacher. These quizzes are always done in pairs, so that the students are working with each other, both to reduce pressure and to allow different kinds of communication and testing environments. So that's the oral quizzes that go on once a week in level 2 at the Russian school. On top of in-class testing in the Russian school, there's also entrance and exit testing that is all school. There we conduct both a mix of classic OPIs by those faculty members who are OPI testers. They are unofficial, and therefore we tell the students these cannot be official results. These are in-house. However, we also conduct, since we're talking about 150 students and not all the faculty are official OPI testers, we also have the faculty conduct shortened oral interviews for placement at the beginning and to give sort of a rough idea of a student's competency that take 10 minutes long and then the same kind of thing at the end. We try to change who has a full-length unofficial OPI at the beginning and who has it at the end, and we make sure that the faculty member is never interviewing his or her own student. So the official testing that goes on so that we assess progress outside of the classroom is purely in the form of an interview. A face-by-face interview. There's no request for a produced role play except with the faculty member who is testing if there is something along the lines of an internal OPI.
Does that include a written
test? That's only the oral. There are 5 tests. There's an essay test at the beginning at the end. There are computerized grammar, listening, and reading tests. and then there's this oral interview. So the students are given 5 tests at the beginning and they're given 5 tests at the end. The testing program was designed by my predecessor, the former director of the Russian school, Ben Rivkin, who I'm sure must be presenting here. Yes. Students certainly would have that option. We have not done it. It would certainly be a possible thing to do. The reason that we had not considered doing something like that goes back to the same reason that we haven't had students reporting material to turn in. There are 4 hours of class a day and a great deal of homework, and the feeling has been that except for those students who might request a recorded version of the lesson, which would of course always be fine, students generally aren't going to have the time or the desire to listen to the lesson again.
Other language schools have done that, though. Japanese school has recorded their sessions. Not this summer, they didn't have iPods, but in previous years they've recorded. They've done audio and they've done video. So that is another possibility, yeah.
We figure that we make up for the constant office hours, the constant contact, and so forth.
By the way, the Chinese school did do record their OPI sessions, so they used the iPod for that. They could have used any recording device, but the iPod just made the convenience of having it automatically digital. More than enough space. Most of the iPods, the smallest iPods now are 20 gigabytes. That's a lot of audio. Can we go a little bit more on with what we have? They might answer some questions. I'd like to talk about some of our analysis of the results. One of the interesting things, I think unique things that we have done was at the end of the summer, we got all the iPods and we extracted out all the metadata, all the information about the study habits we extracted from the iPods, and we aggregated it in a program that we created. And you probably can't see that. Very small. But it's a nice program for generating statistics about usage. So, actually, that's not the one I want to talk about. Let me start with the Chinese school. Chinese school perhaps was a little bit more successful than the Russian school because the Chinese school had dialogues and vocabulary. And perhaps Chinese students might need to listen more than Russian students. I don't know. They certainly had to make the connection with the new characters. But we found that the Chinese school used the iPods more than the Russian school. And we have a whole bunch of statistics. We found that the most listened to lesson in the Chinese school was lesson 2 English, listened to 4,666 times. Now that's all students in all the items in lesson 2. I know there are about 30 vocabulary items, about 10 lines of dialogue. So, but what's interesting, we were able to very precisely find out who listened to what. The most listened to lesson in the Chinese school was lesson 6, dialogue 1, taking a Chinese class, was listened to 493 times. So those generate interesting statistics. We also found out the average listening time for any given lesson was, we found that lesson 1 English was listened to the most, on average 5 times. Chinese school students listen on average about 2.5 times to any given audio file, on average they listen to that. We also found out which students listen to the iPod the most. And in the Chinese school, there was one student who listened to the iPod more than all the other students combined. I don't know what was going on there. Listened to something as many as 43 times. I think they might have just left it on. Yeah. Yes, so we did correlations. I'll talk a bit about that. Other students, and you can see, you go down the list, the other students listened to less number of times. We also had the average play count. This one student listened to things on an average of 9 times. Most of the other students hovered around 4, 3, 2 times. And that seems to be 2 to 3 times repeating the same thing seemed to be sufficient for study purposes. We correlated all this stuff with assessment results, entrance and exit exams, both the Chinese and the Russian school have excellent entrance and exit exams, and we measured their progress and we compared that to usage, and we found no correlation, except for one student in the Russian school. There was a correlation. This student used the iPod more than anyone else. There were two students in the Russian school who used the iPod quite a bit, and this one student was did very well. You probably can't see it, but in terms of progress in oral, reading, listening, writing, and grammar, which the Russian school has a placement test for all of those entrance and exit exams, that student did better than was amongst the best in all those categories. Most progress in grammar, also fairly good progress in listening and in oral. So maybe we can say that the iPod is useful based on this one student. I don't know, but we looked at what that student was listening to and found out that the student seemed to listen on an average of 2 times. Listened to a broad range of things, listened to things not only that were assigned, we had a bunch of additional material, general vocabulary items with context sentences that weren't required, but this student listened to that stuff a lot. So this student seemed to really find the iPod useful, used it a lot, and used it intelligently. Some things, the most played thing was played 18 times by the student. It was this word for arrival, boots, parcel, snow. These were the vocabulary that the student played a lot. I think that's all I want to say. Any questions about that? Yeah.
Do you have any empirical data to how
students
did fire cabin and how often they
would do? No. Yeah, we have no idea how often they use this in previous years. The same material as we've used in previous years, but we don't have any data as to how much they used it in the previous years compared to with the iPod. That would be an interesting question, yeah. Yes?
Well, I'm wondering, it's a lot of quantitative data,
yep.
And actually it's very hard, I think, to find in this kind of studies, is learning increase or not,
yep.
When we change. But I'm wondering, are you thinking of doing some topic groups to have more qualitative indication as well?
Yep.
How they use it, their motivation to use it,
yep.
And what's behind it, you know, is there a change of behavior in their learning process or not?
That would be good to find. We didn't gather much information. We did have a survey, an online survey that they took at the end of the summer, which asked them whether they thought the iPod was useful. We queried them about various features of the iPod. Unfortunately, so few people filled out that assessment. Only about a quarter of the students filled it out. That wasn't really good data. I don't think it was really indicative of everyone. Yeah. Yes. That's right. That's right. And that would be very, very interesting to find out more about that. I don't know how we could do that. I guess it would just be a questionnaire in which we would, or some sort of focus group. That's a very good suggestion. Yeah. Back then? Yeah. Well, this wasn't a research experiment. It was a pilot project. We didn't have a control group. We didn't want to give iPods to half the students and not iPods to the other half. That would have caused a riot. So, basically what we did, just to reiterate what I talked about earlier, was we took all the material, Chinese school, all the material that they needed, the Russian school, portion of the material that they needed to study, and we made it available in iPods in addition to the traditional ways. And all we have to go on is we have the usage statistics. But it isn't we can't make any kind of real judgment. We did correlations with assessments, but it's not a rigorous research project. It's more of a pilot project to see whether we thought iPods were effective. Yeah.
You know, with all of us listening here, is this something that you think that an individual teacher could do on his or her own without, you know, your technological support?
Have you used an iPod?
A couple, yeah.
Okay. Well, the iPods are pretty easy to use, and I think people who have used iPods will probably agree playing the files are pretty easy, listening to them on iTunes, transferring them from iPods to iTunes isn't too bad. If you want to begin to produce your own material, we haven't even touched upon podcasting. And I think this is really fascinating for teachers, that you can then begin to produce your own material, and it could be based on your class sessions, or it could be based on working with your colleagues. It becomes much easier, lowers the barrier to entry for creating material. You can get together, you can record. I can envision all sorts of possibilities here, going to China or Russia and recording conversations in cafes, you know, that kind of field work. It becomes so much easier that you can produce that kind of material. The recording is relatively straightforward. There needs to be some technical expertise in terms of then taking that audio material and cleaning it up. You want to try to achieve a good audio recording quality. The iTalk is fairly good, but if you wanted to do this kind of work, produce your own material, you'd want to buy an external mic which you can attach into this and get a higher quality audio. You'd want to learn a little bit about how to edit and clean up audio files. Many audio files that you have people here listen to podcasts? Okay, so podcasting is a great way of delivering material. We have a content management system at Middlebury called Segway, which is being used for this site here. You can upload a file into Segway, and that becomes available. Every single Segway page has an RSS feed in it. And you can just take that RSS feed and put and just plug it right into iTunes, and it will download any audio files on that page. I think this will become easier. I think more and more course management systems, perhaps they already have this capability of doing RSS. And do people do RSS? RSS is a really interesting technology for delivering timely material, and I suspect that it'll be used more and more in education. So you can record your material fairly easily. The editing of the audio takes a little bit more expertise, and once you've got that edited, and once you have a system that's set up to deliver podcasts, it's pretty straightforward. It's a matter of just uploading it into the system. And then people can get that pretty easily. But there's still a technical learning curve, but it's getting easier. Yeah.
You said that you looked at the data at the end to see which things were studied the most.
Yep.
Does that give you any idea of something to do in the classroom then to reemphasize or bring in?
Karen, did you find any of that?
In Russian, no, because we simply didn't have enough material on the iPod to load it on the iPod, that is, to be able to make that kind of assessment. So we'd like to expand the amount of material that would be on there so that we could get better ideas of what we could be doing in the classroom.
Right. I mean, I was thinking when you said chapter 61 that most people looked at in Chinese, they might say, well, why are people having to look at that so much, and can we help them in some way?
With regard to the Russian, since it was really only concrete vocabulary items they were listening to, the results were very predictable. The one word that was listened to far more than anything else was a long word. For those of you who speak Russian, they look at that in Thanksgiving Day in Russian. So the words that are long were the words that they listened to the most, so it was absolutely predictable. So it didn't provide any new material in that regard, but I think it would be more useful as a tool to find out what we should be doing in the future if there's more material loaded onto the iPod. Find out whether the dialogues are more important for students to listen to, or the conversations, when they do or don't have the script. Yes, oh, the person who can answer that question well. Linda Benedette has taught first year Russian at Middlebury this summer. Please.
I can say, since I was in the classroom with the students, that the one thing that we three teachers felt more than anything else was that
while the vocabulary was certainly useful, we would have found it much more useful to have on the other longer sources of input.
Yep.
Yeah, on the website, just because the students who were iPod friendly from the beginning, that's how they listen to everything. And
yep.
Some of them didn't have computers with them because they don't always bring their own computers to Middlebury because it's a hot dorm room and they don't want to stay in their dorm rooms all day anyway. It's not air conditioning. And so they were used to it. And then for the a lot of older students had never seen an iPod before and were a little bit afraid of it, frankly.
Yep.
And in first year, you always get older students with greater proportions because they're coming from the business world and whatnot. And so I think we found that we, for classroom purposes, would have preferred to have the conversations, which are not transcribed anywhere in the learning material, and the dialogues, which are spoken about the slower, which are transcribed in the learning material. Because those would have made it more likely that more of the students would have spent more quality time with those things
yep.
outside of class, and would have made it less incumbent upon us to devote so much fun time to making sure that everyone had done it.
And we just didn't have the time to prepare those materials.
I know.
Yeah. One interesting point about vocabulary study on the iPod. There were some technical problems with that we have to work out. iPods want to play from one song to another, and it's very tricky to, particularly when your song files are very small for individual audio item, to stop it and play it back. It's very tricky. You have to stop at the right point. Because if you stop it in between its transition from one to another, it keeps going. It just doesn't pick up that button click. I think what we'll do is we're going to just add some space, some blank space at the end of each audio file, so it's extended a little bit. And yeah, that might help. Yeah. Oh, you could do that too. Yeah, you could on iTunes, but not on the iPod. Yeah, iTunes you can specify the space between. iTunes by default overlaps the song. That's even more problematic because when you're listening to music, you want one seamlessly move into the other. But you have to actually change your iTunes configuration so that it waits till one song is ending to begin to play the other one. But you raised an interesting point about playlists. I want to talk a little bit about playlists. This was not used at all, this idea of playlists, and in particular this idea of smart playlists. Smart playlists I'm equating here with study lists. I'm not sure if you're familiar with smart playlists. They are essentially are saves, searches, and sorts. And in combination with the rating field, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the rating field, iTunes and iPods allow you to rate tracks on a 1 to 5 star basis. Okay, so if you really like a song, you give it 5 stars. If you don't like it so much, you give it fewer stars. In the context of education, you can think of rating as knowledge. And one way of using the rating field is to mark with fewer stars those items that you don't know, and mark with more stars those items that you do know. Students did not do this for various reasons. I think it was kind of complicated, and it was only vocabulary, but I could envision this. I know I certainly use the rating field all the time for listening to music, but also listening to podcasts. I download a podcast I think is really great. Well, I give it more stars. You download some podcast from a Russian radio station that you think is really helpful, you give that more stars. Or you download something and you really don't know what it was all about, you give it fewer stars so that you know you can go back to it. Because with a smart playlist, you can create a playlist that consists of... I don't know why I'm doing this because you probably cannot see it. Well, let me just pull it up so I remember what I was about to say. You can create a playlist of all the songs from a given album that you have rated between 1 and 3 stars. And then you can sort that by the one that you've played least recently, for instance. So I could set, for those of you who can see, I can set my rating, find all the all the songs that are in the Russian collection that I have rated in the range of 1 to 2 stars. These are items that I need to study. And I'm going to go ahead and sort those by least often played, perhaps. Or I could sort them by least recently added, least recently played. So it can generate for you all sorts of like flashcards, but again, it doesn't have to be just dialogues. It could be any kind of material in whatever unit. And this is a really interesting challenge with iPods, the idea of granularity. How big do you want to make your files? Or how small, how granular do you want them to be? How you want to have your audio files represent a useful amount of information for language study that would be useful if it were remixed. So dialogue is interesting. Do you want to have, for a given dialogue, do you want to have a single audio file for every line of the dialogue or a single audio file for the whole dialogue? There's advantages to both. If you have it all in one file, and assuming you can display the dialogue itself, the text itself, then that's one encapsulated unit. But if you break each line down into a separate audio file, you can go through and rate your knowledge of each of those and remix them in various ways. You can take all those audio files and remix them and listen to it, and up comes a new line of dialogue you weren't expecting, comes out of a smart playlist, and you can listen to it, and now it's in a new context. So if you increase the granularity, you can allow for more remixing and recontextualizing material. But that recontextualization has to make sense. Yeah? The main thing about the new iPods is the recording quality is going to be much better. The new iPods have a higher quality recording.
Video recording.
You can't record video with the new iPods, but you can play back video. Right, you're talking about playing video? No, you can't record video on the video iPods. But you can play back. So some of the new features, the latest iPods allow you to play video. They have a bigger, nicer screen, higher quality audio. They allow you to display lyrics. So that could be the text of whatever language lesson you have. What else? Also, chaptering. So again, back to this idea of granularity. Another option you can have with a large audio file that might be a dialogue is you can break it down into chapters. And this is something new with the latest iPods. And therefore, a long audio file might be 20, 30 minutes or an hour. You can break it down into chapters, which is sort of like CD tracks, that you can jump from one chapter to another. But in addition, each chapter can have its own image and its own text, I believe. All right, so again, the question is, do you have small, separate audio files that are remixable, or do you have larger audio files that are broken down into chapters, each chapter which has a different image and a different description? Lots of possibilities. Oh, you can, yeah. Yeah, you can record, you can deliver video to the latest iPod, but you have to have your own video camera. But once you've recorded any kind of video, you can repurpose for iPods. There's some recommended formats. You'll probably want to use MPEG-4 or something. You want to reduce the size to something that works on the iPod. But you, yeah. Yeah, you can't do it directly from the camera to the iPod. You're going to have to save it from the camera to the computer, and then you'll need to compress it.
What do you need for that? To reformat?
If you use iMovie, there's a default setting for exporting to iPod capable.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah.
You can send students abroad.
You can send students abroad. With a video camera, and then that material could be brought back and put onto your video iPod. Yep. Yeah. No. Again, with the RSS technology, you can, and I think more and more content management systems, course management systems will have these capabilities that you should be able to just upload the file to the website. Students should be able to download it from the website directly into iTunes, and then iTunes directly into the iPod.
Organized in a
Organized, yes. Using the metadata. If you put the metadata tags in properly, it'll become organized in the iPod. Yeah. Yep.
Did you look at anything students added to
the... Oh, yeah, yeah.
What sorts of things got added by the students individually, stuff that wasn't on there when they got it?
Primarily music. Primarily music. A lot of Russian music, some pop music. But both the Russian and Chinese schools, there were some students who did download music. And actually, this did come out in the surveys. The students did ask if the iPods could be have Russian or Chinese music and different kinds of things. They found that would be useful. Yeah, Jeff?
Downloading material that you have prepared for yourself is not problematic, but I would be concerned about the copyright implications of material like exercises from textbooks. Typically, the producers will let you put it on your server because it's restricted to students who have logins and passwords.
Yeah.
How do you...
Yeah. Well, this summer we chose the Chinese school and the Russian school because the Prentice Hall had given us permission to use them on the iPods, and the beginning Mandarin Chinese stuff was in press, and we checked with the publisher and they thought that was fine. But you're right. I suspect this. I recommend that you ask the publishers. And you know, Middlebury, we were the first people to ask for MP3 files or actually, we digitized ourselves all the French in Action material. And then we gave it back to Annenberg, CPB Annenberg. So I think you just have to convince the publishers that this is a good thing. And they may go for it, or they may not. I don't know.
Yeah. And not only did they give us permission, they were really excited.
Oh, cool. Fantastic.
You know, because they want to be on top of the track.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Really
yeah. Yeah.
Well, would you give some of the things about the broadcasting from iPod?
Podcasting.
What tools do we need more than
iPod? Podcasting, basically, you need a recorder that you plug into your iPod, which will allow you to record. From that, you just plug it into your computer that downloads into iTunes. In iTunes, you can add the metadata about where the recording took place, who it's about, any kind of information you want. And then to podcast it, you need a tool that will generate the RSS2 enclosures. And that basically involves putting on a website from which students can get access to an RSS feed. It's very technical, but there are tools out there that make it a lot simpler. And our content management system does it. Blogging tools do it a lot. Hopefully, course management systems will start to pick up on it as well. Yeah. 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 The ID3 tags in particular. Yeah, we actually met with Apple and we told them about our project and they expressed interest. We even thought about doing what Duke and Stanford had done was Apple is developing their own server which allows you to get access to all your class material through the same interface as iTunes. So you go into class, you get your class material, and then you buy some music as well. This is something Apple's very excited about. And we thought about using that system, but because of the highly granular nature of our material, that we had thousands of files, it wasn't really conceivable that you could download in the same way you download music tracks. Yeah. iPods?
Yeah.
To get the material onto the iPod, you don't have the resources to do it for the students. You want the students to be able to do it themselves.
Well, I don't think that we can do it for the students. We have the time to do it
yeah.
themselves. Because part of what we want to use them for is for
Yeah.
Well,
you set up your iPods for manual update. You have a version of iTunes that has all the stuff you need on it. You plug your iPod into that computer and you drag all those files onto the iPod that you want to add it to. It's pretty efficient. Yeah, you should be able to do it from one computer. Use one computer to populate all your iPods, and you can do it at any point. If you have a lot, it's going to take longer, but it's a relatively efficient process. Yeah. Alas, not. There is talk of a Bluetooth being added to the next version of iPod, which would allow you to send information from one iPod to another, but that's not available yet.
Can you have access to your
iPod? Golasa, yes.
But what about, do you have something in France?
We don't have the copyright available for some of the other stuff that we developed yet. The only thing we have the copyright available that we can distribute is the Russian and the Chinese. It's in press right now, so we're kind of negotiating that, but I doubt we'll be able to make those widely available, unfortunately. No, it's public. Yeah, you can. It's on a secure server, but there are pages you can get to without authentication. Yeah, I think that's the end of our session.
Thank you very much.
Huh?
What's the URL for the Golasa site?
If you search for Google Golasa, you'll find it. Golosa. Yeah, you'll find it.
Hi. Karen Matthews. I'm Carrollton Farmers Branch in Carrollton, Texas.
Nice to meet you.
And I'm the foreign language coordinator, but we're currently in an iPod pilot that
we
started in August.
How's it going?
It's going well so far. I was just wondering if perhaps we could come to Vermont to visit and chat with you, bringing my tech person with us.
Sure.
Because, I mean, my head is spinning with all these great
ideas.
And stuff.
So
that would be possible.
Sure, yeah, just contact me.
Contact you via your website, perhaps, and stuff. Because,
I've talked to a number of
foreign language
teachers. Oh, absolutely.
Great.
It's been a revolution.
Good. Thank you very much.
Sure.
There's that URL you mentioned at the beginning. Do you have it written out anywhere?
If you Google iPods in education,
iPods in education,
you'll find the website.
Okay.
Yep. Thank you very
much. Hi, my name's Lisa Rose.
Hi.
And Carmen Tesser
said
that we might be speaking. Here's my card.
Oh, okay.
I'm working with her at Georgetown University Press on this project that she's working on for Portuguese material.
Yep.
So she was saying that you guys have been talking a lot and trying to figure out what the best system is for this.
To get of that material on iPod.
Exactly. Well, to get some of that material on a DVD versus a website versus they're doing it in Macromedia Director right now.
Oh yeah.
Remember that?
It's really good.
And post to a website and there's been a delay and so we're gonna talk with her and maybe and I probably will need to call you and talk to you about
to get something on DVD.
Yeah. I'm not sure where things are at the moment.
Sure, give me a call, and I might pass you on to somebody else. I don't work a lot with DVDs.
Okay.
I have done some work with Macromedia Director, but it kind of moved to more web-based materials.
She said that you were, encouraging her to do web-based materials,
which
would be great, but I don't know where it would be hosted.
Yeah, we can help out with that.
That would be great.
Yeah.
Thanks very much.
Nice to meet you.
Hi. Thank you very much for your presentation. iPod played a major role in the language learners. The process of learning.
Yeah.
And I wonder how this may affect the future of the configuration of the language level the place to study.
Well, you know that Middlebury College doesn't have a dedicated language lab. It hasn't had one for a while. So we have long since moved away from the traditional language lab. We deliver all the materials to students via web, by the web. Yeah, so we don't have, and the only shortcoming of that is we have no way to do the listen, record, compare paradigm. And I didn't mention that with iPod. You can't even do that with iPod. The ability to listen to something, to record your own rendition of that and compare it. That is not easy to do on the iPod. It's not very easy to do on the web either. So that's one of the limitations of moving away from. But at the same time, we haven't found that, at least in language schools, not many of them have wanted to do that kind of thing, the listen, compare, listen, record, compare, except for French phonetics and a little bit of the Arabic school. You could use GarageBand or Audacity. It's kind of clunky. You know, ideally we'd like a simpler solution, but yeah. There's no way. We talked to Apple about how they could make the recording UI a little bit better, so that you could listen to something and then have the recording UI immediately available to record and play back. But as it stands now, you're gonna navigate around a whole bunch of places to get to something. So that's the only shortcoming. But otherwise, we don't have a lot of use for traditional language lab anymore. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Sure.
If you Google iPods in education, yeah, you'll find it.
And I'm middle grade, Alex Chapin. Or you could Google my name and you would find it, too. You having fun? Oh, yeah.
You type the name of the...
Yep. You can, if you click on that and get info, you can see how you can add that in. You can export out all the information from the iPod, export out the library, and it exports out as a file that contains all the metadata, all the information.
I plug my iPod in, you can tell me how many times I've listened.
Yep.
To it.
Yeah, I can
export out.
You export the library file. Yeah. Export your library, your iPod library.
Right, right.
Yeah. And that'll save it as a file. Then we had a tool that we developed ourselves that we were allowed to aggregate all those and compare
the
them.
ID of the student by the ID number of the.
Yeah.
The
yeah. When they signed out the iPods, we recorded their name, their ID, and the iPod ID, so we can make that connection. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Hi.
Hi.
Enjoyed that very much.
Oh, good.
I am totally ignorant when it comes to iPods. I mean,
yeah.
I know there's a way to go, but
yeah,
I don't have one. Do you have any kind of, is there a resource that I can go and kind of get familiar with how to use it, what to do with it?
The Apple website is really great.
The Apple website
has very good information about how to use the iPod, just how to, the mechanics of it,
mm-hmm.
the playing files, recording, uploading, all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
And my website will go into some of the pedagogical implementations of that and the various things you can do from a pedagogical point of view, both for second language acquisition and just education in general.
And in your site?
If you Google iPods in education.
Do you have any courses that are already that someone else could download?
No, we don't at this point.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just wanted to enhance the language a little bit to kind of get.
Yeah, we don't have any. We can make the Golisan material available, and you can find links to it from the website. That's public, but we don't have the copyright for any other material.
Apple's educational website has tons of projects
that's
that kids
right.
have done all over the country.
That's right, yeah. That's
worldwide,
right.
in fact.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure where you find it, but the woman who was here yesterday, Janet Fisher, or whatever her name was, gave a 3-hour workshop on iPod.
Oh, great.
GarageBand. Yesterday from 1 to 4.
Yeah, I was here today.
Oh, great.
But, she has a website. Maybe I can give you her address.
Yeah.
And you can access all the Apple stuff off of her blog site. So
yep.
I'll see if I can find you.
Okay, that'd be great.
Good.
Thank you.
Hi.
My name is Christine Richard. I actually went to the Spanish school.
Oh, good.
Really wish we would have had the technology a couple of years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
When I went, I think they could be doing
You were in Madrid?
Yes.
Yeah, I've been there a couple of times,
I'm now at a school and they're really excited about using technology in the foreign language, and they're pretty generous about giving grants. So if I were to start a pilot program, I guess,
mm-hmm.
and wanted to do like a little study, what would you suggest? Like if I had like a $2,000 budget, like what would I need, I guess, to kind of start off to do that?
So bulk of that money would be used for the iPod.
Yeah.
You could get away with doing, if you wanted to do audio capture, you could certainly use Audacity, a free tool. There are lots of free software. I suppose if you wanted to invest in something, you might invest in depending on what you want to do. I mean, the iPod is the primary expense. And I guess you'd want a system to be able to deliver those iPods, the audio files effectively. You have a course management system or something?
Right now I'm using Blackboard.
Okay, I'm not sure if Blackboard, you could probably upload the audio file to Blackboard and students could download that. That would be one way. RSS is another way. Blogging tools may be a little bit better equipped for delivering this kind of stuff than traditional course management systems. And some blogging, their blogging tools that are free. They're close to services.
That you're talking about, like you were saying, with the better CD quality, are
yeah.
those the video iPods as
those
well?
Are the video iPods, yeah.
And that comes with the microphone as well?
Unfortunately, I don't think they have microphones yet for those new iPods, but I'm sure they will have them in the coming weeks.
And how much will that run more or less, the microphone?
$300 for the iPod, I think is the starting price for the iPod. Educational discounts a little bit less. And I don't know what the iTalk recorder, I guess I can turn this off now. This was only about $30, so